stop me if you've heard this one, but I grew up a Methodist preacher's kid in Tennessee. The town we lived in the longest was Kingsport, which was a mid-sized industrial town organized around Eastman Kodak, which meant that most people who lived in the town were of middle income or higher that I knew of in my sheltered middle-class white existence. And being a Methodist preacher's kid, we had the privilege of going out to eat almost every Sunday afternoon, thanks to the good blessings of the families of the church. And there was one family in particular that liked to take us out. So my sister and I were constantly competing for which all-you-can-eat, pull-yourself-up-to-the-trough restaurant. I can't remember which one was whose favorite. One was Piccadilly, the other was Bonanza. This was before the Golden Corral moved in up at the hill next to the hospital. And I would later reflect on the idea of just the trough restaurant next to the hospital and how you could just move back and forth between the two. So on this one particular Sunday, it was who's ever's turn to go to Bonanza. And we had gone almost through the line when I happened to look back and notice that a man had come in who looked very different from anyone I'd ever seen in real life. I guess I knew that homelessness existed because I watched television. In fact, I remember watching some kind of like after-school special about, you know, Jenny doesn't have a home or something like that, and I actually tried to run away from home because I thought that seemed kind of cool. But I'd never seen what the abodally challenged really looked like until that day. This man was very big. He was enormous. I mean, this could have been from my perspective as an 11-year-old girl, but he was a huge man. And he had dingy gray hair, and his whole body was covered in filth. I'd never seen anything like it. Even working with people, going out to farms, dirty, yes. This was a kind of grunge I'd never seen before. And so I just kept looking back and tracking all of his movements. I was fascinated. He was like a creature from another planet that had stumbled into my reality. And so we had finished going through the line and sat down, and I watched as he counted out in nickels and dimes his paying for his food, and then sat down and he began to eat what he'd collected going through the line really, really fast, as if he were in a food-eating contest. And I just couldn't stop staring. And I think someone said, stop staring, it's not polite to stare. But I just, you know, I tried to carry on. And then all of a sudden, there was this sound that I have never heard in my whole life, and I hope never to hear again. This man belched. It was so deep and sonorous. I remember my grandfather, we used to say when he snored, it could rattle the windows. This belch, it was like the silverware clinked a little bit on the tables. And then silverware really did clink because everything stopped. You remember those E.F. Hutton commercials? How somebody would say, well, my dad works for E.F. Hutton, and then everything in the room would, you know, go silent. It was just like that. Everything stopped for what felt like an eternity. And then slowly, after people stopped uncomfortably looking at their food or at the wall or wherever their eyes had landed in that moment, they gradually started their conversations back up. And we finished our food, and we walked outside, got in the car, and he finished his food about the same time. And I remember just watching as we drove away, trying to figure out where he was going to go. And I still felt so embarrassed, but I didn't really know if I was more embarrassed for him or for us. Because there we were in that place of abundance and gluttony. And I knew that every single person in that room just wanted him to go away. And I knew that that feeling was wrong.